Persuasion by Jane Austen. Dramatized for radio in three parts by Micheline Wandor, with Juliet Stevenson as Anne Elliot, Tim Brierley as Captain Wentworth, and Sirica Cusack as Jane Austen. Part 3, Friendly Persuasion.
Upon learning that Louisa Musgrove has become engaged to Captain Benwick, Anne Elliot dares to hope that Captain Wentworth's affections might once again be hers. One morning, Anne, her sister Elizabeth, and Mrs. Clay were accompanied on their walk past the shops by their cousin, Mr. Elliot.
Oh, dear, I do believe it is beginning to rain.
It is not very much, Mrs. Clay.
It is quite enough for me, Mr. Elliot. You cannot like the rain, Miss Elliot.
Indeed not.
Come, let us turn into Mullins and we can shelter in the shop.
Oh, wait a moment. Is that not Lady Dalrymple's carriage waiting at a little distance from us?
Oh, why, yes, I do believe it is.
I shall step to Lady Dalrymple to request her assistance.
Let us enter the shop meanwhile.
I'm afraid there will not be room for all three of us in the carriage.
The rain is a mere trifle. I shall be perfectly happy in walking with Mr. Elliot.
Oh, no, no. The rain is also a mere trifle to me. I can hardly allow it even to drop at all. I shall walk with Mr. Elliot.
No, really. I really do not mind at all, Mrs. Clay.
I'm quite as anxious to be left to walk with Mr. Elliot as you could be, Miss Anne.
Surely you would prefer to ride with Elizabeth in the carriage to continue your conversation.
Oh, Miss Elliot and I have all afternoon to converse.
I've been successful. Lady Dalrymple will be most happy to take you all home and will call for you in a few minutes.
I shall walk with you, Mr. Elliot.
No, I shall. I insist.
I do consider that my cousin Anne's boots are rather the thickest of the two.
It is fixed then, Mrs. Clay. You shall be of the party in the carriage with me.
They had just reached this point when Anne spied, most decidedly and distinctly, Captain Wentworth walking down the street.
Excuse me, I must go to the door to see if it's still raining.
Of course it's still raining, Anne.
Anne wanted to see if it rained. Why was she to suspect herself of another motive? Captain Wentworth must now be out of sight. But she would go. At that moment, Captain Wentworth himself entered the shop.
Good day, Miss Elliot.
Time has changed him.
Or Louisa has changed him.
He has seen Elizabeth. She has seen him.
And she had the pain of seeing her sister turn away with unalterable coldness.
There is Lady Dalrymple's carriage, and it is beginning to rain again.
Mrs. Clay, Miss Elizabeth, I will accompany you to the carriage.
Miss Elliot, are you going in the carriage with Lady Dalrymple and your sister?
Well, sir...
May I offer my services to you, to walk you to the carriage?
I'm very much obliged to you, but I'm not going with them. The carriage would not accommodate so many.
And how are you to return home?
I walk. I prefer walking.
But it rains.
Oh, very little. Nothing that I regard.
Though I came only yesterday, I have equipped myself properly for Bath already, you see, with a new umbrella.
Indeed. I see, Captain Wentworth.
I wish you would make use of it if you are determined to walk.
I'm very much obliged to you, but I must decline.
Are you not perturbed by the rain?
I'm convinced that the rain will come to nothing. I'm only waiting for Mr. Elliot. He will be here in a moment, I'm sure.
Ah, you are to walk with Mr. Elliot.
I am, indeed.
Forgive me, Miss Anne. I apologize for having kept you waiting.
It was not long, Mr. Elliot.
Are you ready to leave?
Certainly. Shall we go?
Anne had never found it so difficult to listen to her cousin. She could think only of Captain Wentworth.
I wonder how long he means to be in Bath.
He might only be passing through.
It is more probable that he should have come to stay.
In that case, Lady Russell would in all likelihood see him somewhere. Would she recollect him? The next day, Anne was walking with her friend when she distinguished Captain Wentworth at a distance.
I wonder if Lady Russell has noticed him. Oh, I dare not look. Ah, she has seen him.
You will wonder what has been fixing my eyes so long, Anne. I am looking after some particular window curtains, but I confess I cannot see them in any shop.
Anne sighed and blushed and smiled in pity and disdain, either at her friend or herself. The part which provoked her most was that she should have lost the right moment for seeing whether Captain Wentworth saw them. A day or two passed without producing anything. The theatre or the rooms where he was most likely to be were not fashionable enough for the Elliots. Anne waited impatiently for a concert evening patronised by Lady Dalrymple.
Captain Wentworth is very fond of music. If I could only have a few minutes' conversation with him again, I fancy I shall be satisfied. Elizabeth has turned from him. Lady Russell has overlooked him. I feel that I owe him attention.
Sir Walter, his two daughters, and Mrs. Clay were the earliest of all their party at the rooms in the evening. And as Lady Dalrymple must be waited for, they took their station by one of the fires in the octagon room.
Why, who is this coming in? Captain Wentworth, I do believe.
On Captain Wentworth's making a distant bow, Anne saw her father give him a simple acknowledgement of acquaintance, and even a slight curtsy from Elizabeth herself. Her spirits improved.
Good evening, Captain Wentworth.
Miss Elliot.
And how do you do?
Well, I am pleased to say, I have hardly seen you since our day at Lyme. I'm afraid you must have suffered from the shock.
No, indeed, I did not.
When you had the presence of mind to suggest that Benwick would be the properest person to fetch a surgeon, you could have little idea of his being one of those most concerned in Louisa's recovery.
I hope it will be a happy match.
All is very much in favour of their happiness. More than, perhaps.
Perhaps, Captain Wentworth?
A sudden recollection seemed to occur, and to give him some taste of that emotion that was reddening Anne's cheeks and fixing her eyes on the ground.
I regard Louisa Musgrove as a very amiable, sweet-tempered girl. But Benwick is something more. He is a clever man, a reading man, and I confess, I do consider his attaching himself to her with some surprise.
I thought him a clever man myself.
Fanny Harvey was a very superior creature. A man does not recover from such a devotion of the heart to such a woman. He ought not. He does not.
You were a good while at Lyme, I think.
I could not leave it till Louisa's doing well was quite ascertained. She would not have been obstinate had I not been weak.
Oh, I'm sure you should not blame yourself entirely, Captain Wentworth. I should very much like to see Lyme again. I have travelled so little, and there is real beauty at Lyme.
Lady Dalrymple, delighted to see you.
Anne was soon divided from Captain Wentworth. Their interesting conversation must be broken up for a time.
I have learned in the last 10 minutes more of his feelings towards Louisa, more of all his feelings, than I dare think of.
And she gave herself up to the demands of the party, to the need for the civilities of the moment, with exquisite, though agitated, sensations.
Lady Dalrymple, how are you?
The delightful emotions were a little subdued when she saw that Captain Wentworth was gone. She was just in time to see him turn into the concert room.
Oh, dear. But we shall meet again. He will find me out before the evening is over.
Anne, my dear, I've been looking for you everywhere. Come, we're all collecting to proceed into the concert room.
See how Mrs. Clay dotes on Lady Dalrymple and Miss Carteret. And Elizabeth, arm in arm with Miss Carteret.
But it would be an insult to the nature of Anne's felicity to draw any comparison between it and her sister's. Her happiness was from within. Her eyes were bright. Her cheeks glowed.
Come, Anne. We can sit here. We have an excellent view of the musicians.
Thank you, Lady Russell.
Miss Anne, will you share my concert bill with me?
Delighted, Mr. Elliot.
I see Miss Anne has to be an Italian song.
Oh, yes. So I see.
Do you speak Italian?
Oh, a little.
Then perhaps you'll explain the meaning of the words to me.
I shall write it for you, Mr. Elliot. But I'm afraid I'm a very poor Italian scholar.
Yes, I see you are. You've only knowledge enough of the language to translate its sight, the Italian nines, into clear, comprehensible, elegant English.
I do assure you that I am ignorant.
You need not say anything more of your ignorance. Here is complete proof.
I will not oppose such kind politeness.
So long without knowing something of Miss Anne Elliot. And I do regard her as one who is too modest with the world in general to be aware of half her accomplishments.
This is too much of flattery, Mr. Elliot.
Perhaps I've had a longer acquaintance with your character than you were aware of.
How so?
I knew you by report long before you came to Bath.
I must confess that you arouse my interest, Mr. Elliot. Who has spoken of me?
The name of Anne Elliot has long had an interesting sound to me. And if I dared, I would breathe my wishes that the name might never change.
Mr. Elliot.
A well-looking man. A very well-looking man. A bowing acquaintance. Wentworth. Captain Wentworth of the Navy. His sister married my tenant in Somersetshire.
There he is. As her eyes fell on him, his seemed to be withdrawn from her. When she could give another glance, he had moved away.
Miss Anne?
Yes, Mr. Elliot?
Miss Carteret is beckoning to me. Would you excuse me?
Certainly. My dear Anne, have you seen Captain Wentworth?
Captain Wentworth?
Why, where, Lady Russell? I did not know he was here.
The colour in her cheek said yes, even though her word said no. The room filled, benches were reclaimed and repossessed. Another hour of pleasure, or penance, was to be set out. Another hour of music.
What is your opinion of the concert, Miss Anne?
I have listened to some of it with interest.
I own myself somewhat disappointed.
In what way?
I expected better singing. I must confess I shall not be sorry when it is over.
And yet the musicians are playing with spirit.
Yes, that is true. Is this place on the bench vacant?
Indeed, Captain Wentworth.
Oh, Miss Anne, I do beg your pardon. There's another Italian song. Would you explain it to me? Miss Carteret's very anxious to have a general idea of what is next to this song.
Why, of course, Mr. Elliot.
Never had she sacrificed to politeness with a more suffering spirit.
Pardon me, Miss Anne. I must wish you good night. I must be going.
Is not the song worth staying for?
No. There is nothing worth my staying for. Goodbye.
Jealousy of Mr. Elliot. Captain Wentworth is jealous of my affections. I could not have believed it 3 hours ago.
For a moment, the gratification was exquisite.
But how is such jealousy to be quietened? How is the truth to reach him? It is a misery to think of Mr. Elliot's attentions.
How might Anne have felt had there been no Captain Wentworth in the case?
But there is a Captain Wentworth. And be the conclusion of the present suspense good or bad, my affection will be his forever.
Prettier musings of high-wrought love and eternal constancy could never have passed along the streets of Bath. It was almost enough to spread purification and perfume all the way, as Anne went the following morning to visit her old friend, Mrs. Smith.
My dear Anne, I can see by your animated features that the concert was most enjoyable.
Oh, indeed it was.
And who was there?
I really cannot say. Apart from our party.
Your countenance informs me that you were in company last night with a person you think the most agreeable in the world.
You penetrate my thoughts so well.
Pray, does Mr. Elliot know that I am in Bath?
You are acquainted with Mr. Elliot?
I have been a good deal acquainted with Mr. Elliot.
Oh, you never mentioned it before.
I want you to talk about me to Mr. Elliot. He can be of essential service to me.
I should be extremely happy. As Mr. Elliot's relation, I beg you would not hesitate to employ me.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I ought to have waited for official information.
Official information?
But now, my dear Miss Elliot, as an old friend, do give me a hint as to when I may speak.
Speak about what? Oh, I see. I am not going to marry Mr. Elliot, Mrs. Smith.
But I thought...
I should like to know why you imagine I am.
Why should you be so cruel?
In what way cruel?
Let me plead for my former friend, Mr. Elliot. Where can you expect a more gentlemanlike, agreeable man?
I have not known Mr. Elliot long. Should he propose to me, which I have very little reason to imagine he has any thought of doing, I shall not accept him.
Not accept Mr. Elliot?
I assure you, Mr. Elliot has not the share you have been supposing in whatever pleasure the concert of last night must afford.
It was not Mr. Elliot, then?
No. Mrs. Smith, from where should you have fancied the idea that I was to marry Mr. Elliot?
It first came into my head upon hearing how much you were together, and all your acquaintances disposed of you in the same way.
That I did not know.
So there is no truth in the news?
There is no truth in my having this claim on Mr. Elliot. But I should be extremely happy to be of use to you in any way I could. Shall I mention to him your being in Bath?
No, I thank you.
I think you spoke of having known Mr. Elliot many years.
I did.
Before he married?
Yes.
And were you much acquainted?
Intimately.
Was he at all such as he appears now?
I have not seen Mr. Elliot these 3 years.
Well, then.
Oh, I beg your pardon, my dear Miss Elliot, for the short answers I have been giving you.
Perhaps you should not speak of anything uncomfortable.
No, I have determined. I think you ought to be made acquainted with Mr. Elliot's real character.
So there is a story to tell.
Mr. Elliot is a man without heart or conscience, a designing, cold-blooded being who thinks only of himself.
My dear Mrs. Smith.
He was the intimate friend of my husband. We were living in very good style. Mr. Elliot was then the inferior in circumstances. My poor Charles would have divided his last farthing with him.
It must have been about the same time that he first became known to my father and sister.
He had been introduced to Sir Walter and your sister before I was acquainted with him.
I should like to know why he should slight my father's acquaintance as he did.
Mr. Elliot, at that period of his life, had one object in view. To make his fortune.
By marriage?
Indeed. Your father and sister were designing a match between himself and your sister Elizabeth, and it was impossible that such a match would have answered his ideas of wealth and independence.
We were not rich enough for him.
That was his motive for drawing back.
Perhaps you sometimes spoke of me to Mr. Elliot.
To be sure I did, very often. I used to boast of my school friend, Anne Elliot.
Ah, this accounts for something which Mr. Elliot said last night. I found he had been used to hear of me, and I could not comprehend how.
It must have been from me.
I beg your pardon, I have interrupted you. Mr. Elliot married, then, completely for money.
I must own I saw nothing reprehensible in what Mr. Elliot was doing.
And the woman he married?
Oh, she was a fine woman. Had a decent education. Was brought forward by some cousins. Thrown by chance into Mr. Elliot's company and fell in love with him.
So he was not in love with her?
No. All his caution was spent in being secured of the real amount of her fortune before he committed himself.
I cannot believe it.
You ought to have proof. You shall have proof.
Oh, indeed, my dear Mrs. Smith, I want none.
If you will have the goodness of bringing the small inlaid box, which is on the table there.
This one here?
Yes.
Here.
Ah, thank you. Here is a letter written by Mr. Elliot to my husband before our marriage. Dear Smith, at present, believe me, I have no need of your services, being in cash again. Give me joy. I got rid of Sir Walter and Miss.
May I see?
Yes, here.
I wish I had any name but Elliot. Yours truly, William Elliot.
The language, I know, is highly disrespectful, but it shows you the man.
No private correspondence should bear the eye of others. But thank you, this is full proof, undoubtedly.
This is Mr. Elliot as he was a dozen years ago. He is no hypocrite now. He truly wants to marry you. His present attentions to your family are very sincere. Did he not see you last summer or autumn, somewhere down in the West?
He certainly did. At Lyme.
Well, he saw you then at Lyme and liked you so well as to be exceedingly pleased to meet you again in Camden Place as Miss Anne Elliot.
That is possible.
But there was another motive. Mrs. Clay, your sister's friend, has given a general idea among Sir Walter's acquaintance of her meaning to be Lady Elliot.
Go on, Mrs. Smith.
Time has worked a very material change in Mr. Elliot's opinions as to the value of the baronetcy. Now, he cannot bear the idea of not being Sir William. When he heard of Mrs. Clay's intentions, he hastened to Bath with the object of watching Sir Walter and Mrs. Clay.
I'm very glad to know all this. But what are Mr. Elliot's connection with you?
Mr. Elliot led my husband into expenses much beyond his fortune. He was a man of warm feelings and not strong understanding. Led by Mr. Elliot and probably despised by him.
And so accordingly, you were ruined.
Yes. My poor husband died just in time to be spared the full knowledge of it. Mr. Smith appointed Mr. Elliot the executor of his will, but he would not act. And this refusal heaped difficulties and distresses on me.
How could he have been so heartless, so cruel? So unfeeling.
There is one particular circumstance which causes me great agitation. I have good reason to believe that some property of my husband's in the West Indies might be recoverable.
Is this a large property?
No, but it would be enough to make me comparatively rich. Mr. Elliot would do nothing, and I could do nothing myself.
Have you no natural connections to assist you?
No, none at all. And I cannot afford to purchase the assistance of the law. It was on this point that I had hoped I might have engaged your good offices with Mr. Elliot.
I must acknowledge that there was a possibility that I would have been induced to marry him. I might have been persuaded by my friend, Lady Russell, which would then have been most miserable when time had disclosed all too late.
To Anne, it was most distressing to see Mr. Elliot enter her father's drawing-room that evening. Now she saw insincerity in everything he did and said.
And so you were going out of Bath tomorrow?
Yes, very early.
And how long will you be gone for?
Oh, the greater part of 2 days, I fancy. Oh.
Then you must come again to Camden Place the very evening of your return. Friday, will it be?
No, I shall not be back until Saturday evening, Sir Walter.
Delightful. I shall look forward to that, my dear fellow.
Anne, what are your plans for Friday?
On Friday morning, I mean to go very early to visit Lady Russell.
You may as well take back that tiresome book she would lend me and pretend I have read it through. I really cannot be plaguing myself forever with all the new poems and states of the nation that come out.
I shall not tell her so.
You need also not tell her that I thought her dress hideous the other night. I was so ashamed of her at the concert. Oh, my best love to her, of course.
And mine. My kindest regards. If only she would wear rouge, she would not be afraid of being seen.
Oh, I wonder who this is.
We're not expecting anybody. Why, Charles Musgrove. And Mary, have you arrived to stay? We have not exactly...
We are come to Bath for a few days with Mama, and we are staying at the White Hart.
Well, I'm delighted to see you both. You must sit down and stay as long as you like. Oh, no, first, Mary, you must come into the drawing room and see for yourself how you like our abode at Camden Place.
Yes, my dear. Come along.
Whom does your party consist of, Charles?
Well, there's Mama, Henrietta, Captain Harville, Mary and myself. Mama has some old friends in Bath whom she wanted to see, and it was a good opportunity for Henrietta to come and buy wedding clothes for herself and Louisa.
Are affairs in such forwardness that Henrietta's wedding clothes are to be talked of?
Yes, indeed.
And how has that come about?
Very recently, Charles Hayter was applied to by a friend with a living only 5 and 20 miles from Uppercross, and in a very fine part of Dorsetshire.
Oh, excellent. I hope you think Louisa perfectly recovered now.
Yes, I believe I do. Very much recovered. But she is altered.
In what way?
There is no running or jumping about, no laughing or dancing.
Indeed.
As if one happens only to shut the door a little hard, she starts and wriggles like a young dabchick in the water. And Bennick sits at her elbow reading verses or whispering to her all day long.
That cannot be much to your taste, I know, but I do believe him to be an excellent young man. Bennick has a great deal to say for himself.
When one can but get him to talk.
Charles, do come in here and admire the looking glasses and china. Oh. What handsome drawing rooms.
Elizabeth was suffering a good deal. She felt that Mrs. Musgrove and all her party ought to be asked to dine with them, but she could not bear to have the difference of style, the reduction of servants which a dinner must betray, witnessed by those who had always been so inferior to the Elliots of Kellynch.
I will ask you all for an evening party. I'm sure Mrs. Musgrove has not seen two such drawing rooms before.
Oh, indeed she has not.
You will be delighted to come tomorrow evening. It shall be a regular party, small but most elegant.
And you shall meet Mr. Elliot and be introduced to Lady Dalrymple and Miss Carteret, who are already engaged to come.
Do call on Mrs. Musgrove, Elizabeth. Anne, you must come with Charles and myself to see Mrs. Musgrove and Henrietta directly.
It was a morning of thorough confusion. A large party in an hotel ensured a quick-changing, unsettled scene.
A note from Mrs. Musgrove. Mrs. Musgrove?
I have the most magnificent station at a window overlooking the entrance to the pump room. Oh, come, Anne, join me.
A parcel for Captain Harville. Captain Harville?
Anne had not been there above half an hour when a party of steady old friends were seated round Mrs. Musgrove, and Charles came back with Captains Harville and Wentworth. The latter remained at some distance.
I fear from his looks that the same unfortunate persuasion which hastened him away from the concert room still governs. He does not seem to want to be near enough for conversation.
She tried to be calm, leave things to take their course.
Surely, if there be constant attachment on each side, our hearts must understand each other ere long.
Anne, look. There's Mrs. Clay, I'm sure, standing under the colonnade, and a gentleman with her.
Where, Mary?
I saw them turn the corner from Bath Street just now. Look, they seem to be deep in talk. Who is it? Good heaven. Is it Mr. Elliot himself?
No, it cannot be Mr. Elliot. He was to leave Bath this morning and not come back until Saturday.
I feel Captain Wentworth looking at me.
Anne, how can you suppose me not to know my own cousin? I am absolutely positive it is Mr. Elliot. Oh, please, Anne, come and look.
I do not wish to stand at the window all day, Mary.
You will be too late if you do not make haste. They're parting. They are shaking hands. Oh, he's turning away.
Very well, I shall look. Indeed, Mary. I do believe you are right. It really is Mr. Elliot.
See? He's disappearing on one side and Mrs. Clay is coming this way.
Yes, it is Mr. Elliot, certainly. He has changed his hour of going, I suppose, that is all. May I sit down now, Mary?
Yes, Anne, you may.
Charles, have you secured tickets for the theatre tomorrow?
I have been to the theatre and secured a box for tomorrow night, Mama.
Is Miss Anne to come? I particularly wish Miss Anne to come.
Oh, I hope so. And I have engaged Captain Wentworth, have I not?
Indeed you have, my dear fellow.
You have done wonderfully well, Charles, dear.
Have you forgot that we're engaged to Camden Place tomorrow night? And that we are most particularly asked on purpose to meet Lady Dalrymple and her daughter and Mr. Elliot, all the principal family connections.
What's an evening party? Your father might have asked us to dinner, I think, if he had wanted to see us. You may do as you like, but I shall go to the play.
But this is Mr. Elliot, my father's heir, the future representative of the family.
What is Mr. Elliot to me?
The careless expression was life to Anne, who saw that Captain Wentworth was all attention.
He is looking at me.
I am perfectly determined to go to the play, Mary.
I am perfectly determined, Charles, in opposing it, and you...
He is coming towards me.
You may go to Camden Place yourself.
Charles, you had much better go back and change the box for Tuesday. Oh. It would be a pity to be divided. And we should be losing Miss Anne, too, if there is a party at her father's.
Oh, I should be too happy to change the party at home for a play with you.
You have not been long enough in Bath, Miss Anne, to enjoy the evening parties of the place?
Oh, no, the usual character of them has nothing for me. I am no card player.
You were not formerly, I know. But time makes many changes.
I am not yet so much changed.
8 years is a long time.
Yes, a long time, Captain Wentworth.
My dear Mrs. Musgrove. Oh,
so I see your father and sister, Miss Anne.
Yes, indeed.
Anne felt an instant oppression. Wherever she looked, she saw symptoms of the same. The freedom of the room was over, hushed into cold composure.
Captain Wentworth.
My dear Captain Wentworth, I have arrived to invite you to Camden Place tomorrow evening to meet a few friends. No formal party. I have brought cards for all the Musgroves and a card for you, Captain Wentworth.
Thank you, Miss Elliot.
The past was nothing to Elizabeth. The present was that Captain Wentworth could move about well in her drawing room.
It will be the most completely elegant occasion of its kind in Bath. You really must come.
Do return and dine with us and give us the rest of your day, Miss Anne.
Oh, I'm fatigued, Mrs. Musgrove. If you will forgive me, I shall go home to Camden Place and rest.
But when shall we see you again?
I shall be with you tomorrow morning.
When Anne looked round again, she could see no sign of Captain Wentworth. Before she departed, she ensured an exchange with Mrs. Clay.
Mrs. Clay? My sister Mary saw you with Mr. Elliot.
Oh, indeed. Oh, very true. Only think, Miss Elliot, to my great surprise, I met with Mr. Elliot in Bath Street.
But I thought he would have left Bath 3 hours before.
He had been prevented setting off. I really forget by what.
Oh. And when is his return?
Oh, Saturday. He was full of Saturday. And I have been full of it too, or my seeing him would not have gone so entirely out of my head.
The following morning, Anne hurried through the rain to visit Mrs. Musgrove and found she was not the first to arrive.
Ah, oh, Miss Anne, I have been having the most amusing conversation with Mrs. Croft.
In another part of the room were Captains Harville and Wentworth, deep in conversation.
Do sit down, Miss Anne.
Thank you, Mrs. Musgrove.
We will write the letter we were talking of, Harville, if you will give me the materials.
They're all here, Wentworth, on this table. Will you join me?
My daughter, Henrietta, as you may already know, is engaged to Mrs. Croft, and we shall be here for the next month at the very least.
Mrs. Musgrove spoke in just that inconvenient tone of voice, which was perfectly audible, while it pretended to be a whisper.
We thought they'd better marry at once. At any rate, said I, it would be better than a long engagement.
I would rather young people settled on a small income at once than be involved in a long engagement.
Captain Wentworth's pen had ceased to move. His head was raised. He paused. He was listening. He turned round to give a look. One quick, conscious look at Anne.
I hear nothing. Only a buzz of words in my ear. My mind is in confusion.
Miss Elliot, would you come over to this window and join me?
Certainly, Captain Harville.
Look, do you recognise this miniature painting?
Certainly. It is Captain Benwick.
Yes. It was painted for my dear sister Fanny. Wentworth is writing on my behalf now to send it to Miss Louisa. Poor Fanny. She would not have forgotten him so soon. It was not in her nature. She doted on him.
It would not be in the nature of any woman who truly loved.
Do you claim that for your sex?
Yes. We certainly do not forget you so soon as you forget. We live at home, quiet, confined, and our feelings prey upon us. You have always a profession, pursuit, business of some sort or another to take you back into the world immediately. And continual occupation and change soon weakens impressions.
I will not allow it to be more man's nature than woman's to be inconstant and forget those they do love or have loved.
What do you believe, then?
I believe that as our bodies are strongest, so are our feelings, capable of bearing the most rough usage and riding out the heaviest weather.
Your feelings may be the strongest, but ours are the most tender. You are always labouring and toiling, exposed to every risk and hardship. Your home, country, friends, all quitted. Neither time nor health nor life to be called your own. It would be hard indeed if woman's feelings were to be added to all this.
Oh, dear. Oh, Wentworth, you've dropped your pen. Have you finished your letter?
Not quite. A few lines more. I shall have done in 5 minutes.
Well, Miss Elias, we shall never agree on this point. But let me observe that all stories, prose and verse, are against you. Proverbs all talk of women's fickleness. But perhaps you will say these were all written by men.
Perhaps I shall. Men have had every advantage of us in telling their own story.
Education has been theirs in so much higher a degree. The pen has been in their hands. I will not allow books to prove anything.
But how shall we prove anything?
We never can expect to prove anything. We each begin with a little bias towards our own sex, and upon that bias build every circumstance in favour of it.
If I could but make you comprehend what a man suffers when he takes a last look at his wife and children and watches the boat that he has sent them off in, and then turns away and says, God knows whether we ever meet again.
Oh, God forbid that I should undervalue the warm and faithful feelings of any of my fellow creatures. I should deserve utter contempt if I dare to suppose such true attachment and constancy were known only by women.
Thank you, Miss Elliot.
No, I believe you equal to every important exertion and to every domestic forbearance, as long as the woman you love lives for you. All the privilege I claim for my own sex, it is not a very enviable one, you need not covet it, is that of loving longest, when existence or when hope is gone.
You are a good soul. There is no quarrelling with you. Wentworth, have you done?
I shall be at your service in half a minute.
Remember to seal your letter.
Yes, indeed.
Good morning. God bless you, Miss Elliot.
Good morning, Captain Harville. Not a word, not a look from him. He passes out of the room with not a look at me.
Miss Anne, Mrs. Croft is about to take her leave.
Indeed. But tonight we have the pleasure of all meeting again at your party, Miss Elliot.
I shall look forward to that, Mrs. Croft.
I shall leave you then. Until later.
I shall walk with you to the door, Mrs. Croft.
Do hurry, my dear fellow.
I do believe I have forgotten my gloves. Ah, here they are on the writing table.
And standing with his back toward the door, he drew out a letter from under the scattered paper and placed it before Anne, with eyes of glowing entreaty fixed upon her for a moment.
I am so glad I found my gloves. Excuse me. Goodbye.
Miss A.E. This evidently was the letter he was folding so hastily while supposed to be writing only to Captain Bennick.
I must speak to you. You pierce my soul. I am half agony, half hope. Tell me not that I am too late. I offer myself to you again with a heart even more your own than when you almost broke it 8 years ago. Dare not say that man forgets sooner than woman, that his love has an earlier death. I have loved none but you. You alone brought me to Bath, for you alone I think and plan. You sink your voice, but I can distinguish the tones of that voice
when they would be lost on others.
You do believe that there is true attachment and constancy among men. Believe it most fervent, most undeviating, in Frederick Wentworth.
I must go, uncertain of my fate, but I shall return hither or follow your party as soon as possible. A word, a look will be enough to decide whether I enter your father's house this evening or never.
Such a letter was not to be soon recovered from. Half an hour's solitude and reflection might have tranquilized her.
My dear Anne, why are you sitting here so alone?
Come, come, Anne, we must go.
I have seen the most marvellous hat in the shop window, Anne. Why you look so pale?
I'm afraid I'm indisposed. Unwell.
Oh, my dear, come with us. You shall soon have the colour back in your cheeks.
No, I cannot. You must excuse me.
We shall not stir without you for the world.
I cannot come with you. I shall go home.
By all means, then. Go home directly and take care of yourself that you may be fit for the evening. Charles, ring and order a chair.
The chair would never do. To lose the possibility of speaking two words to Captain Wentworth in the course of her quiet, solitary progress up the town, and she felt almost certain of meeting him, could not be borne.
No, really, I do not need a chair.
You have not at any time lately slipped down and got a blow on the head.
No, of course not, Henrietta. Charles, I wish you particularly to assure Captain Harville and Captain Wentworth
that we hope to see them both this evening. Will you promise me to mention it when you see them again? Do promise me.
If you wish it. My dear Anne, I am very concerned. You look extremely pale. I shall go home with you.
No, Charles, please, do not. Do you not have an engagement elsewhere?
Well, only an engagement at a gunsmith's. I assure you that I can go another time.
Well, if you insist.
Oh, look, I say, Captain Wentworth, which way are you going?
I hardly know.
Are you going near Camden Place? Because if you are, I shall have no scruple in asking you to take my place and give Anne your arm to her father's door. She's rather done for this morning and must not go so far without help.
Oh, Charles.
The fellows promised me the sight of a capital gun, and if I do not turn back now, I have no chance.
There could not be an objection.
I shall be delighted to escort Miss Elliot.
With smiles reined in and spirits dancing in private rapture.
I shall see you both later, then. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Charles.
Shall we proceed, then, Miss Elliot?
Where to, Captain Wentworth?
Why, to Camden Place. That was the direction in which we were heading.
Yes, it was.
You do not seem sure.
I was just thinking.
Perhaps we could take a slightly different direction.
Perhaps towards the gravel walk? It is quiet there and quite retired.
And we shall be able to converse, I fancy.
And here the present hour would become a blessing indeed, and prepare it for all the immortality which the happiest recollections of their own future lives could bestow.
Here we can exchange again feelings and promises which once before seemed to secure everything,
but which were followed by so many years of division and estrangement. Here we may return again into the past, more exquisitely happy, perhaps, in our reunion than when it was first projected.
More tender.
More tried.
And more fixed in a knowledge of each other's character, truth, and attachment.
More equal to act. More justified in acting.
And they slowly pace the gradual ascent, heedless of every group around them.
I have not mistaken you, I believe.
Indeed, no. Jealousy of Mr. Elliot was the retarding weight, the doubt, the torment.
When did that begin?
Oh, that began to operate in the first hour of meeting you here in Bath.
And it returned again?
After a short suspension to ruin the concert. And that influenced me in everything I said and did.
Or omitted to say and do.
Everything in the last 24 hours.
What brought about the change?
The jealousy was finally vanquished by the sentiments and tones which reached me when you talked with Captain Harville.
And under the irresistible governance of which you seized a sheet of paper and poured out your feelings. Did you mean everything?
Of what I then wrote, nothing is to be retracted or qualified. I persist in having loved none but you.
Was I never supplanted?
Never. I never even believed myself to see your equal. Only at Uppercross did I learn to do you justice, and only at Lyme did I begin to understand myself.
And your attempts to attach yourself to Louisa?
The attempts of angry pride. I did not care, could not care for Louisa. But till that day I had not understood the perfect excellence of the mind with which Louisa's could so ill bear a comparison. At Lyme, I saw everything to exalt in my estimation the woman I had lost, and there I began to deplore the pride, the folly, the madness of resentment which kept me from trying to regain you.
Oh, you must have suffered a great deal.
I was no sooner freed from the horror and remorse attending the first few days of Louisa's accident than I found that I was considered by Harville an engaged man. I was Louisa's in honour, if she wished it.
Was that why you left Lyme?
Indeed.
But then you were released from your obligation to Louisa by the news of her engagement to Bennet.
Astonishing and felicitous intelligence. Within the first 5 minutes, I said I will be in Bath on Wednesday, and I was.
And then our first meeting at the concert.
Oh, that was exquisite. The moment you stepped forward in the octagon room to speak to me, the moment Mr. Elliot appeared, tore you away.
I did not think you noticed so much.
To see your cousin close by you, conversing and smiling, and feel all the horrible eligibilities and proprieties of the match. To consider it as the certain wish of every being who could hope to influence you.
How could I look on without agony?
You should not have suspected me. If I was wrong in yielding to persuasion once, it was to duty. But no duty could be called an aid here. In marrying a man indifferent to me, all duty would have been violated.
Perhaps I ought to have reasoned thus, but I could not. I could think of you only as one who had yielded, who had given me up, who had been influenced by anyone rather than by me.
I should have thought that my manner to yourself might have spared you much of this.
No, no. Your manner might only be the ease which your engagement to another man would give. I left you in this belief, and yet I was determined to see you again. I believe we have arrived at Camden Place, almost in spite of ourselves.
We have indeed, Frederick.
I do not wish to leave you now, my dearest Anne.
I require a little time to think. An interval of meditation. Serious and grateful. I shall see you this evening.
And she went to her room and grew steadfast and fearless in the thankfulness of her enjoyment. The evening came, the drawing rooms were lighted up, the company assembled. It was but a card party. It was but a mixture of those who had never met before and those who met too often. A commonplace business, too numerous for intimacy, too small for variety.
I have never found an evening shorter.
Glowing and lovely in sensibility and happiness.
Anne, you look quite beautiful tonight. Have you seen Mr. Elliot?
She avoided Mr. Elliot.
I care not for Mrs. Clay, and I have nothing to blush for in the public manners of my father and sister. With the Musgroves, there is the happy chat of perfect ease.
With Captain Harville, the kind-hearted intercourse of brother and sister.
With Admiral and Mrs. Croft, everything of peculiar cordiality and fervent interest.
And with Captain Wentworth,
always the hope of more moments of communication. Always the knowledge of his being there. Have you seen the greenhouse plants, Frederick?
I have not, Anne.
Come, let us draw away from the others. I have been thinking over the past and trying impartially to judge of the right and wrong. I mean, with regard to myself. And I must believe that I was right, much as I suffered from it, in being guided by Lady Russell.
You will have to convince me, my dear Anne.
To me, she was in the place of a parent. I am not saying that she did not err in her advice.
I am delighted to hear it.
But I mean that I was right in submitting to her, and that if I had done otherwise, I should have suffered more in continuing the engagement than I did even in giving it up. I should have suffered in my conscience. Can you forgive her?
In time.
I am glad to hear that.
I, too, have been thinking over the past. And a question has suggested itself. Whether there may not have been one person more my enemy even than that lady.
And who is that, my dear Frederick?
My own self. Tell me, if when I returned to England in 1808, with a few thousand pounds, if I had then written to you, would you have answered my letter? Would you have renewed the engagement then?
Would I?
Good God, you would.
Did you not think of it?
It is not that I did not think of it or desire it.
What then prevented you?
I was proud. Too proud to ask again.
Oh. 8 years of separation and suffering might have been spared.
Can be in doubt of what followed. Sir Walter made no objection, and Elizabeth did nothing worse than look cold and unconcerned.
With 25,000 pounds, and as high in my profession as merit and activity could place me, I am now esteemed quite worthy to address the daughter of a foolish, spendthrift baronet.
The more I see of Captain Wentworth by daylight, I am very much struck by his personal claims and I feel that his superiority of appearance might not be unfairly balanced against my dear Anne's superiority of rank.
The only one among them whose opposition of feeling could excite any serious anxiety was Lady Russell.
I'm afraid there is nothing less for me to do than to admit that I have been pretty completely wrong, and to take up a new set of opinions and hopes. My first object is to see my dear Anne happy.
Of all the family, Mary was probably the one most immediately gratified by the circumstances.
It is very agreeable that Captain Wentworth should be a richer man than either Captain Benwick or Charles Hayter. And if we can but keep Captain Wentworth from being made a baronet, I would not change situations with Anne.
The news of his cousin Anne's engagement burst on Mr. Elliot most unexpectedly.
It has deranged my best plan of domestic happiness and quite destroyed my best hope of keeping Sir Walter single by the watchfulness which a son-in-law's rights would have given.
I am mortified at having seen Mr. Elliot withdraw.
Mr. Elliot soon quitted Bath, and on Mrs. Clay's quitting it likewise soon afterwards, and being next heard of as being established under his protection in London, it was evident how double a game he had been playing. For Mrs. Smith, however, the pleasure of seeing Anne's happiness was doubled by the knowledge of Captain Wentworth's friendship towards her.
Mrs. Smith, I can put you in the way of recovering your husband's property in the West Indies by writing for you, acting for you, and seeing you through all the petty difficulties of the case.
Anne was now tenderness itself, and she had the full worth of it in Captain Wentworth's affections.
Well, Miss Elliot, we shall soon be married.
Indeed we will, Captain Wentworth.
Captain Wentworth. A well-sounding name, I do believe.
And Sir Walter felt enabled at last to prepare his pen with a very good grace for the insertion of the marriage in his volume of honour, The Baronetcy.
Anne Elliot married Captain Frederick Wentworth at Kellynch Hall in Somersetshire.
Of Persuasion by Jane Austen, dramatized for radio by Micheline Wandor, Anne Elliot was Juliet Stevenson, Captain Wentworth Tim Briley, and Jane Austen Surika Cusack. Sir Walter Elliot was Roger Hume, Elizabeth Elliot Claire Falconbridge, and Mr. Elliot Peter Harlow. Mary Musgrove was Catherine Herbert, Charles Musgrove Alistair Cameron, and Mrs. Musgrove Sheila Grant. Henrietta Musgrove was Alison Dowling, Lady Russell, Patricia Gallimore, and Mrs. Smith, Carol Boyd. Mrs. Clay was Hedley Nicklow, Sophia Croft, Tina Gray, and Captain Harville, Paul Alexander. The music, taken largely from Jane Austen's manuscripts at Chawton, was played by Kenneth Mobbs. The musical advisor was Patrick Piggott, and the serial was directed at Pebble Mill by Vanessa Whitburn.